Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is an encore edition of Soundcheck. Tinka, tinka, tinka. Tinka, tinka, tinka. Soundcheck. Tinka, tinka. From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and if you were a kid in the 1970s, or if you raised kids during that decade, you might have spent some time with this album. You might have even spent a lot of time with it. Here's the opening track. Sing it if you know it.
There's a land that I see where the children are free, and I say,
the album Free to Be You and Me was released in 1972. It would go on to inspire a popular television special 2 years later and leave its mark on a generation of kids and their parents. Like any successful record, Free to Be was jam-packed with catchy songs, but it also contained some pretty progressive messages about gender roles, feminism, tolerance, and how it's not always easy to be a kid. Today, we're going to revisit some of our favorite moments from a three-part series that we aired, marking the 40th anniversary of Free to Be You and Me. Later, we'll hear from songwriters who wrote many of the songs, and from a former NFL defensive lineman, Rosie Greer, who sang one of them. And we'll hear from some listeners who still have powerful memories of the album. But let's start with Carol Hart. In the early 70s, she and her husband, Bruce Hart, were writers on a fledgling kid show called Sesame Street. She would go on to produce the Free to Be You and Me album, and later, a TV special that was based on it. Carol told us about being approached by Marlo Thomas, the young TV actress who was the ringleader of the project.
Well, she had been reading stories to her young niece, and they were, you know, commercial stories. And she found them quite disturbing because they all had, you know, really stayed with the stereotypes of gender. Mm-hmm. And so she decided that she was going to do basically a spoken record album of new stories, and she went out to find them. But she wanted a woman to produce the album mm-hmm. for her.
I should mention Marlo Thomas had gained fame on her own as That Girl, the TV show of that name, the daughter of Danny Thomas. And so she was well-connected.
Very well-connected.
And when she came to you, the brief was, we're going to do a spoken word album.
Well, that was what they thought. And then we expanded it. And she had collected a lot of material, existing material, and she asked me to read it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't really have the job yet. But I read it, and I was, let's say, less than impressed. Mm. And I said to her, I didn't really know Marlo. I said, I'm not sure we're being ambitious enough here. Well, that just is the wrong thing to say to Marlo. And it just lit a fire under her. And that was that.
So it didn't just become a spoken word album. It became an album full of original songs, followed by a book, followed by a TV special. Carol Hart, the Emmy Award-winning television and film producer. Lori Rotzkoff, your book is called When We Were Free to Be. Carol has said this was not just the start of this project, the Free to Be project, but also the start of Ms. Magazine. What was in the air? What was the zeitgeist like in 1972?
Right. Well, the women's movement was in the air, right? This was the heyday of second wave feminism. And what Free to Be You...
What is second wave feminism?
Well, the second wave after the first wave, that was earlier in the 20th century and prior to that, in the 19th and 20th centuries, suffrage.
suffrage was first wave, and second wave is...
Second wave happened in the 1960s, okay. Right? It began in the 1960s, and that was second wave. So one thing that lots of historians have not focused on yet is the extent to which children and childhood really mattered in the women's movement of the 60s and 70s. And Free to Be You and Me was in many ways kind of the tip of an iceberg, a much bigger iceberg of activism and activity around children and childhood.
So now let me ask you about the title of your book. When We Were Free to Be suggests that maybe this was, you know, a moment in time that was specific to that time.
Exactly. And in many ways, what we were trying to do with our title is to try to address some of the tension between this moment in the early 70s, which was very much a kind of utopian moment when there was a lot of activity around breaking down barriers around gender and racial stereotypes and really changing things and allowing children to express themselves in a way that certainly during the post-war period in the 50s was not the case.
Mm-hmm. Sisters and brothers, brothers and sisters.
That's the song Sisters and Brothers from Free to Be You and Me. You also heard a bit of our conversation with Lori Roscoff, co-editor of a new essay collection called When We Were Free to Be, and Carol Hart, who produced the album and the TV special. One of the kids who loved Free to Be back in the 70s was Faith Saley, a regular guest here on Soundcheck and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning. When she joined us, I asked her what she remembered about listening to Free to Be You and Me as a kid.
I remember that it was always, I think we listened to it once a year in school. So that was always a fun day. It meant the teacher didn't want to teach class that day. So they'd dim the lights and you'd watch the TV program.
There was a TV special,
yeah. There was a book and a record.
Right. But the record came first.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I was introduced to it in public school.
Really?
Yeah. Why? How were you introduced to it?
My sister.
The gender-neutral fairy came and left it at your house?
Yeah, no, my sisters. One or two of my sisters. It was never clear to me whose record it was, but it was in the house.
Right.
So
we heard it in school, and then to me, it was doing it in different musical theater productions. The first play I did, I got to do the girl baby in Boy Meets Girl.
Go again. I told you, I'm a girl. I know it. I'm a girl and you're a boy.
I think you're wrong.
I am never wrong. What about shaving?
What about it?
You just shaved, right?
Wrong.
Exactly. And you know why? Because everyone's born with a clean shave. It's just that girls keep theirs and boys don't.
So what does that prove?
Tomorrow morning, the one that needs a shave, he's a boy.
Well, I can't wait until tomorrow morning.
See, that proves it. Girls are patient. Boys are impatient.
Yeah? What else?
Can you keep a secret?
Absolutely.
There you go. Boys keep secrets. Girls don't.
Go on.
Are you afraid of mice?
No.
I am. I'm terrified of them. I hate them. Squeak, squeak, squeak. What do you want to be when you grow up?
A fireman.
What did I tell you?
How about you?
A cocktail waitress. Does that prove anything to you?
You must be right.
I told you I'm always right. You're a boy. And
oh,
I'm
my goodness. Mel Brooks and Marlo Thomas from the album Free to Be You and Me. So by the time you heard it, were you old enough to kind of get the message? And
yeah, I think I was. I remember by the time I did Boy Meets Girl, I knew it was funny because I was 12. But even when I was younger, I thought like the song William's Doll, I thought mm-hmm. was, I knew it mattered. And the song went, I remember the song When We Grow Up. Will I be pretty? And the song says it doesn't matter if I'm pretty. And I remember thinking even when I was seven, like, I want to be pretty. Like, it does matter. I wasn't completely sold on the message yet, John.
When we grow up, will I be pretty? Will you be big and strong? Will I wear dresses that show off my knees? Will you wear trousers twice as long?
Celebrating 40 years of this project, which was then a book and a TV special. Faith Saley, now that you have your own son,
yeah.
Augustus, who's
yeah.
still, you know, he's born this year. Still...
He's moldable. I could make him into a cocktail waitress if I really tried, John. He's 5 months.
So are you playing this record for him?
I sing it to him. I sing him It's All Right to Cry a lot, and I sing When We Grow Up. And last night, broke down sobbing playing him William's Doll. Who knew that was coming? I hadn't heard it in years, and I played it on my iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And there was something so touching about it. I think it was because I was getting him ready for bed, and I was burping him like a baby, and it was a day when the gender stereotypes were in full play in the Saley Simmel household, and his father had not done any parenting, and his mother had done all of it. And
not going to touch that one.
And I was, but I was thinking how important it is for a child to be loving and to be loved gently by both parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me cry.
Faith Saley with us on Soundcheck. And we're joined now, and just in time, by Dr. Diane Ehrensoft. She's a clinical psychologist. Maybe can help you with that sobbing thing, Faith. She's also author of the book Gender Born, Gender Made. And Diane is a founding member of the Child and Adolescent Gender Center at UCSF, University of California, San Francisco. They're director of mental health as well. Diane, your children listened to this record as well?
My children cut their teeth on this record. The month this record came out was the month I became a mother with my first child. So our children just, I think, considered this the Pledge of Allegiance. That's how much they heard this song.
Now, when you first bought the record, were you aware of exactly what you were getting, or did it just seem to be like, hey, here's a kid's record, and it features Marlo Thomas and a bunch of actors?
I should say I was completely aware. I was just finishing my doctoral dissertation, which was titled Sex Role Socialization in Preschool-Age Children. So I had been already studying this for a number of years, and I am also a dyed-in-the-wool 1960s feminist.
Mm-hmm.
So I had already been going around to schools talking about why do we have pink blankets and blue blankets and working with children about breaking down stereotypes. So I was delighted when this record came out.
Oh, my God, Diane, I love you. Will you be Augustus's adopted grandmother and give him pink clothes?
Yes, and the other thing I wanted to tell you, Faith, it's a sorry story, but your little five-month-old Augustus is not going to be that moldable.
Oh, no, tell me. I need to know this.
Because what I've learned over these many years of both raising my own children and working in the profession is children have some very strong ideas about their own gender, and that's part of what we have to learn about them. And so we can give them important messages about breaking down stereotypes, and that's wonderful. But who they are as a boy or a girl and how they want to be a boy or girl is very much set by them as well. So we have, that's a very humbling experience. I had two children, a girl and a boy, determined to raise them gender independent and with no stereotypes. So we had dolls, we had trucks. I had a boy and a girl. Nobody played with the truck, and everybody played with the dolls.
Well, you know what? That's kind of liberating as a parent, that I can do so much to offer him, you know, both sides, and he will teach me what kind of boy he's going
to
be.
Exactly. And Faith, when you were saying about wanting to be pretty, my daughter went through the same thing. She said, that's pretty dumb. What's wrong with being pretty?
Right. So,
and what I've learned is everybody should be feel free to be pretty. It doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl. Why wouldn't everybody want to be pretty?
Now Diane, have things changed? I mean, we're talking about a record and then a book and a TV special, 40 years old. Did it change anything?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was a real game changer then, and it has been played in households all over America. It's been watched. It's been read. And I just, again, 40 years later, want to give a tribute to Ms. Magazine and Marlo Thomas for doing this. But it's gone way beyond them, as history always should go forward from 1972 to 2012. So now, instead of William wants a doll, William can tell you William wants a dress and William wants to be a girl.
Right,
or William
now
is a girl.
Now, that's the song that Faith mentioned as well, which brings up a question I want to ask to both of you. But first, why don't we hear, just to remind people what the song sounds like. In this song, a little boy named William wants a doll. It takes him a while to get one. Marlo Thomas and Alan Alda do the singing.
A doll, a doll, a doll. William wants a doll.
So William's grandma, as I've been told, bought William a doll to hug and hold. And William's father began to frown, but Grandma smiled and
calmed him down, explaining,
William wants a doll, so when he has a baby someday, he'll know how to dress it, put diapers on double, and gently caress it to bring up a bubble, and care for his baby as every good father should learn to do. William has a doll, William has a doll, 'cause someday he is gonna be a father too.
From the album Free to Be You and Me, we're celebrating its 40th anniversary this month on Soundcheck. That's Alan Alda and Marlo Thomas, the creator, the prime mover behind the project, and a William's doll. And we are speaking with Faith Saley, who is blubbering in a corner here in the Soundcheck studio.
I look like one of those pageant winners who's like fanning her eyes so her mascara doesn't get wet.
And on the line with us, Dr. Diane Ehrensaft, who's author of Gender Born, Gender Made. Okay, here's my question about William and his doll. The song, for most of its length, you know, talks about William wants a doll and all the things he wants. He wants to learn how to dress it and change the diaper and give it
Hold
a bottle
it,
and all
it.
That. And then there's this kind of moralizing ending at the end of the song that says, well, here's why he wants the doll, because he's practicing to be a dad.
That's a great point.
Which always
almost
seemed to
undermines
me,
it, right?
It almost seems like, you know, it's like, don't worry about any other implied message about William wanting a doll. This is really why he wants. So I guess, Diane, I asked you before, have we, you know, how much did this change things? It seems like a girl wanting to be a boy, a tomboy, that's kind of fun. And people look at that and say, oh, isn't that cute? But a boy wanting to be a girl is still, you know, we still have this kind of image of the sissy as something that's negative.
I would say things have changed. Things have not changed. Both are true. Sexism is alive and well. It's still more valued to be male than female. So when a male crosses the line, people raise their eyebrows, get nervous and anxious. When a girl crosses the line, if she doesn't cross too far, people are fine with it. So a girl coming out in a football uniform, that's cute. Mm-hmm. A boy coming out in a princess dress, that's a showstopper still in 2012. So all that is still happening. On the other hand, as we know, when the New York Times Magazine has a mainstream article around boys wanting to wear dresses, gender fluidity in all children, that they can move along from male to female, something has radically changed. Mm-hmm. So what I do think, we have to remember that Free to Be You and Me was 1972.
Right.
So there was a progressive message here. And indeed, we were trying to get daddies then to take responsibility for childcare. In that sense, it was a good message. It was a bad message, and that's the only reason a boy should play with a doll.
Mm-hmm.
A boy should play with a doll like any girl should play with a doll, because it's a doll. And it's fun to play with dolls. And what we've learned in 2012, and more people are listening, is that little boy's mom or dad may say to him, you know, it's okay for boys to play with dolls. And that little boy may say back, you're not listening to me. I know that. I'm telling you, I'm a girl who plays with dolls. And that's a very different phenomenon, which we're opening up our eyes and ears to in 2012.
And I guess that would be one of the points of the Child and Adolescent Gender Center there at UCSF?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We came together from many different disciplines saying we have to give all of these kids who are gender fluid, transgender, gender nonconforming, gender variant, whatever the category we put them in, a place to be supported and be able to be who they are, just like we were supporting William to have a doll. So we've all come together to do that, both with providing services, but also as advocates in the community.
Faith?
I remember when I have two brothers, and one is gay and one is straight. We did not know that at the time they were little, and my oldest brother, who's straight, wanted to be a baseball player, and I remember my other brother, who's younger, always said he wanted to be a mom, a chef, and a monkey. And he kind of ended up being both a mom and a chef. He's a great cook, not professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And
how is he as a monkey?
Yes, this is going to say.
And he is a, you know, he is a parent with his husband. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's interesting thinking back that probably the vocabulary that a tiny boy had back then to say, I want to care for a baby when I grow up, was to say, I want to be a mom.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I remember when girls my age, I'm 41, and when we were asked what we wanted to be when we were little, I mean, there's the song Parents Are People, and it says that, you know, girls can be, mommies can be ranchers. But I was surrounded by homemakers. That's what they were called when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I remember a lot of girls would say, I want to be a mom and a lawyer. I want to be a mom and a veterinarian. But you never heard a little boy say, I want to be a fireman and a dad. Being a dad was always just part of the package. You got to be one.
Well, that in itself, you know, the idea that there are things in Parents Are People that some people now look back and say, well, that's a little dated. But the ultimate message, the underlying message of this song is that mommies and daddies can be almost anything, although there are a few things they can't be, according to Marlo Thomas and Harry Belafonte.
Some daddies are writers or grocery sellers, or painters, or welders, or funny joke tellers. Some daddies play cello, or sail on the sea. Yeah, daddies can be almost anything they want to be.
They can't be grandmas or mommies.
Parents are people.
Parents are people.
People with children.
People with children.
When parents were little, they used to be kids like all of you. But then they grew, and now parents.
Marlo Thomas, Harry Belafonte singing Parents Are People from the album Free to Be, You and Me, celebrating its 40th anniversary this month. And earlier in the song, Marlo is singing about all the things that mommies can do, yep. All the jobs they can have.
They can be ranchers and cleaners and bakers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Diane, I mean, you know, there's obviously a very fine message there, but then there's also, you know, the few things, a mommy can't be a daddy can't be a mommy. Is that a message?
Sounds a little focused on the family, doesn't it?
Well, there's a few things about it, because, you know, my original copy of the album is on vinyl. Mm-hmm. So I went last night and downloaded on my iPod and re-listened to it. And I realized when I heard that in 1972, it was like, oh, that's a nice song.
Yeah.
When I heard it this time with my consciousness of 2012, I went, wait a second. I know a lot of mommies who became daddies. I know a lot
right.
of grandmas who became grandpas.
Yeah.
And we have that issue about transgender changes that happen. And a good message for all people and children to know is that gender is not fixed and it can change, and we need to leave room for people to be who they are. And the second thing was definitely around family, that it's very focused, and the whole album really is focused on heterosexual families.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear someday we'll be wives, someday we'll be husbands, not in every state if you're gay.
Right.
You know, four more states look good right now, but it was very much based on traditional models of family and directed towards becoming a family.
Now, what about, you know, for kids, and I mean, Faith, your son, Augustus,
mm-hmm.
5 months old
yep.
now, is he already seeming like a boy? I mean, we have two girls, and from day one, it seemed like whatever we tried to do to be gender neutral, they were pushing themselves in the girl
direction. So interesting.
So what do you do about kids who are kind of gendered, strongly gendered in ways that we now think of as very traditional,
right.
maybe even passé.
I'm very conscious of, excuse me, for a baby shower, we were given a bunch of it was a book a party. So we said, not baby gifts, just give us books. And since I have lots of gay friends, we got many copies of Eloise at the Plaza
mm-hmm.
and Black Beauty and all these Little House on the Prairie books. And so that's one thing that I'm excited to read. I don't know, John, because I don't have a girl, but I have to say that when I found out I was having a boy, I made a very conscious point to, even when I speak to him, I try to use the same language I do if I had a little girl. So I call him sugar and pumpkin
mm-hmm.
and sweetie pie. And I hear our doorman call him buddy and dude. And it always sounds so strange to me. And also, I will say that on Halloween, I dressed him in a pink sleep suit. And everyone said, who bought that for you? And I said, I bought it for him. And I said he was dressed as a warrior against hue-based gender stereotypes.
Nice. Diane, are we just expecting too much from a record that came out 40 years ago, that it could actually by itself start a whole movement that would sort of undermine gender stereotypes? I mean, should we just sort of say, what a good effort that was 40 years later, it still has a place?
I think we should say it's a wonderful effort, and it in itself is not going to move mountains. And we have to remember that that album came out of a context where people are already thinking about these things. So it both moved something forward but reflected a sea change at that time. So, and that's wonderful. And I think what I think it's great for both parents and children to do is to watch and see everything with a thinking eye, so that if you hear William's Doll, then you can talk about, well, is it really just about becoming a daddy? So it's a kickboard to move it into 2012. And so I think it's an album that should continue to be celebrated and honored, very much so.
And if you were to make a part two, volume two of Free to Be You and Me, what would that be like?
In my volume two, I would give stronger messages around the following. That who you are as a boy or girl and how you're going to be a boy or girl is up to you to tell your parents, not for them to tell you how to be. And that who parents are people who can help stretch the horizons as far as possible so all children see they have many options, like wearing a pink Halloween costume no matter what your gender, and that we can make a more genderless world. And I will just tell a personal story in terms of what we could take into volume two. I had two children, one boy, one girl. They were both quote-unquote femme. It was fine for me that my son was, not fine that my daughter was. So I tried to make her a strong girl. So when she wanted to be a princess for Halloween in kindergarten, I said, that's great. But you are going to be a practical princess who makes your own bed and goes to work. And I'm going to sew your costume. And I made her an Audrey Hepburn elegant streamlined costume. She hated it. She hated it. And she has never forgiven me. She is 40 years old this month. And it was one of the biggest mistakes I made as a parent, is not listening to her and honoring who she was.
All right. Well, that's actually a pretty good place to leave it with.
We need the song William Wants a Dress.
Yes, we do. That would be perfect in volume two.
Diane Ehrensaft is a clinical psychologist. She is author of the book Gender Born, Gender Made. Faith Saley here in the studio is a regular member of the Soundcheck Bullpen and CBS Sunday Morning contributor. Faith, Diane, thank you both for being with us.
And thank you so much for having me.
This is Soundcheck.
It's all right to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you. It's all right to cry. It might make you feel better.
Our look back at Free to Be You and Me continues with some of your stories. We'll hear from our listeners next. And later, the former NFL football player Rosie Grier joins us to talk about his turn on the album, singing this song, It's All Right to Cry. This is Soundcheck. You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We recently aired a three-part series about the landmark children's album Free to Be You and Me, which was released 40 years ago, 1972. You can hear the whole series on soundcheck.org, but today we're revisiting some of our favorite moments. That includes the voicemails we received from you folks, some of whom were kids when the album came out. But first, the grown-ups. Here's Mavis in Dobbs Ferry, New York. She was a mom raising kids in the early 70s.
When my children were small and I was an active writer in the ad business, I was invited to a luncheon by Gloria Steinem. And those of us who were invited were all women working on commercials aimed mostly at women. Gloria Steinem handed out copies of Free to Be You and Me, the big, lovely disc, the old LP. So my children, when they got the record, when I took it home that night, just particularly loved William Wants a Doll.
William has a doll. William has a doll. 'Cause someday he is gonna be a father too.
And the other one that is absolutely delightful was the two babies talking to each other and discovering the differences between boy and girl.
Oh, wait. Here comes the nurse to change our diapers.
About time, too. I have never been so uncomfortable in my life.
Hey, look at that.
What?
You see that? I am a girl. And you're a boy.
Hey, it sure looks like it.
And my grandchildren have listened to it over and over again as well. So we're thrilled with Free to Be You and Me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mavis. Up next, Candace. She taught songs from Free to Be You and Me to campers at a day camp near Philadelphia in the mid-70s.
At the time, I think I took for granted the concepts of female equality and the importance of expressing feelings and emotions, because that's what people were talking about and they were the norms of the day. But now that I look back on it, I think the clarity with which the Free to Be people communicated those concepts was so direct and so smart and so engaging for people of many different ages. I think Free to Be really did infiltrate our collective consciousness in some far-reaching ways. Today, the tunes and the production seem kind of dated to me, but when I revisit the content, it still resonates.
Now Zachary Zug took out the rug, and Jennifer Joy helped shake it. Then Jennifer Joy, she made a toy, and Zachary Zug helped break it. And some kind of help is the kind of help that helping's all about. And some kind of help is the kind of help we all can do without.
That's Helping, written by Shel Silverstein and played by Tom Smothers. From Free to Be You and Me. Okay, so we've heard from people who were adults when the record came out 40 years ago this month. What about the kids? Here's Liz in Manhattan.
I grew up listening to Free to Be You and Me over and over and over again. I knew all the words to all the stories and all the songs. I listened to the record so much that I drove my family crazy. And when I got in trouble for something I don't remember, I was punished by having Free to Be You and Me taken away. It was the worst week of my childhood. Thanks.
Lifelong, since I could vote, registered Republican since the Reagan days, but grew up with Free to Be You and Me in my house. Totally changed my life. Have it on my iPhone now and try to get my kids to listen to it, but they don't want any part of that.
Hi, my name is Max. I'm an African-American gay man, and I just want to say I am so excited that you're doing this series on Free to Be You and Me. I have to say there are probably three albums that have been the most important to me in my life, and this is one of them. I walked in the house, the radio was on, and I heard Girl Land playing, and I couldn't believe my ears.
Wonderful Girlland, the island of joys, where good little girls pick up after the boys. So come on in and look about. You go in a girl and you'll never get out.
I just wanted to say I think it'd be great if you all, for the rest of the series, encourage people to, you know, kind of sing their favorite bits or maybe even recite, you know, parts of the album that they really like. So I'm going to get the ball rolling. Here's my part. Okay. When I grow up, I'm going to be happy and do what I like to do, like making noise and making faces and making friends like you.
And when we grow up, do you think we'll see that I'm still like you and you're still like me? I might be pretty, you might grow tall, but we don't have to change at all.
Okay, well, we took our listener Max's advice and asked you to sing your favorite songs from the album on our voicemail. Up next, we'll play some of what we received for the actual songwriters who wrote those songs. And NFL star Rosie Greer talks about singing on Free to Be You and Me as well. That's next on Soundcheck. You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Soundcheck.
For a land where the horses run free, and you and me are free.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now in our look back at Free to Be You and Me, the 1972 children's album, which later became a TV special. Our listener, Max, just challenged others to call us up and sing their favorite songs from the album over the phone. Here's one we received from Sherry in Highland Park, New Jersey.
For me, I just loved the very beginning, just knowing that the record was getting started. There's a land that I see where the children are free, and I see it ain't far to this land from where we are. Just knowing that the whole album was getting started just put a smile on my face, and it still does.
Well, it just so happens that the person responsible for writing that music, the Emmy-winning composer Stephen Lawrence, is here with me in the Soundcheck studio. Stephen, what do you think of Sherry's rendition there?
Very much in tune. Very hard to sing in tune a cappella.
Now, you were the music director of Free to Be.
I wore a lot of hats. I was the music director. I wrote 5 songs for the record and the TV special, so I was a busy guy.
Yeah. Now, the story goes you wrote the title track.
Yes.
Sherry just...
I composed it. Bruce Hart wrote the lyrics.
Right. In a day? Is that right?
The music in a day.
Wow.
Yes.
So how did you come up with the concept and the tone, which would, after all, set the tone for the whole record?
It had to be exactly what it is. It had to be bright, melodic, catchy, gettable. You had to be able to hear it once or twice and be able to sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to set up the concept of the album. It had to sound like something good is going to happen and we're going to enjoy ourselves.
Well, now, 1972...
Yes.
The first sound you hear on this record is a banjo.
Yes.
You didn't hear a lot of banjo in 1972. You know, it hadn't had its little renaissance that it's having now.
Banjo was perfect for the introduction of this song. It is sort of timeless. It says joy. It says non-sophistication, although some of the album is quite sophisticated. It says, listen up. This is an unusual instrument you don't hear every day. It's going to set up a song that you're going to like.
Now, as the music director, was it your job to kind of match songs with their singers?
That was done pretty much by Marla Thomas and her co-producer, Carol Hart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I suggested any singers. I was pretty much told who was going to sing the song. And then I would contact them. We'd set a key. I would talk to Marla and Carol about the concept, what the visual was going to be if it was the television special. So, nobody said, do you want to have the new seeker sing this song? Somebody said, we're going to have them. And I said, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. They had had a recent hit at this time. With
a few.
Yeah. But yeah. I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
That's right.
And here they are singing the song that Stephen Lawrence wrote to get the album started, the title track from Free to Be You and Me.
I see.
The New Seekers and the title track from Free to Be You and Me, celebrating 40 years, the song written by Stephen Lawrence, the Emmy-winning composer of over 250 songs and scores for Sesame Street and music director of Free to Be. So how did you, Stephen, get involved in this project?
I knew Carol and Bruce.
That's
Bruce
Carol and
Hart
Bruce
and
Hart.
Carol Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce and I, he was the lyric writer. Bruce
right.
and I had written some successful songs. And we were making some contacts. We were getting recordings. This was very exciting. But you couldn't really make a living at it. And we were looking for something more high profile to do at the same time. Carol got to know Marlo.
Mm-hmm.
And Marlo said, I'm doing this project that was not yet named Free to Be You and Me. Bruce named it that. And Bruce Hart named it that. And they said, would you like to be part of this? And they introduced me to Marlo. Marlo introduced me to her vocal coach. Who had to bless me. Marlo had to bless me. Bruce and Carol had already blessed me. And we were off. And before...
You were a pretty sanctified guy by that point, then.
That's right. That's right. And that it came a time to need a title song, and they said, and Bruce is very good coming up with titles. He came up with the title lyric for Sesame Street, mm-hmm. for the opening song of Sesame Street.
Now, Bruce Hart's no longer with us. Carol Hart was with us on the first of these three shows in our series looking back at Free to Be You and Me. Joining us now on the line is another composer and lyricist who wrote numerous songs, several on the Free to Be album, and that is Carol Hall. Carol, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you, John?
I'm good. Now, when you were asked to work on this project, you had just moved to New York, right?
That's right.
So what did this offer for you?
Well, I had come back to New York after being away for 5 years, and I had one credit that was really special, which was that a young, relatively unknown young singer named Barbara Streisand had recorded a song of mine called Jenny Rebecca. So that meant I had an agent. I'd never had an agent before. And that even meant the agent would answer my phone calls. And that agent was also Stephen Lawrence's agent and Carolyn Bruce Hart's agent. So I think when the word was going out via Marlo and Carol and Bruce and Stephen, right, Stephen?
Absolutely, that's right.
Way, that I was fortunate enough to be corralled into this. But my experience was totally different. I was home writing songs. I don't think I ever had a meeting with Bruce and Carol and Stephen, but I just kind of was home, and they'd say, we need a song about all the things parents can do that are jobs that you wouldn't expect. Mommies can be ranchers. Mm-hmm. Daddies can be joke tellers. I kind of sent them in and waited to hear the good word.
And did they tell you in advance, like with Parents or People, for example, that Marlo herself would be singing this with Harry Belafonte?
Sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't. I don't remember what anyone said about Parents Are People, but I definitely remember that Rosie Grier would be doing It's All Right to Cry.
All right, we'll get to Rosie's part of the story of the record in a moment, but here is one of Carol Hall's songs. This is Parents Are People, and it would indeed end up being sung by Marlo Thomas and Harry Belafonte.
Mommies are people. Mommies were little, they used to be girls like some of you. But then they grew, and now mommies are women. Women with children. Busy with children and things that they do. There are a lot of things, a lot of mommies can do.
A little bit of Parents Are People from the now 40-year-old album Free to Be You and Me. Marlo Thomas was the driving force behind the record. She sang that song with Harry Belafonte. And Carol Hall is the composer and lyricist, wrote several songs on the record, and also wrote the music and lyrics for somewhat older kids from the Broadway stage musical The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. She's with us on the line.
Sesame Street for many, many years as
okay.
well.
Okay, so Sesame Street, sort of a thread with Bruce and Carol Hart and with Stephen Lawrence, mm-hmm. who's also mm-hmm. here with me in the studio. Let me ask you guys, Stephen, were you a dad at the time? Carol, were you a mom when you were writing these songs?
I was a mom, and I'm glad you asked, because one of the funniest and most meaningful things that happened to me while I was writing the songs was that my six-year-old son said, "Mommies can't be doctors," and I said, "What? What?" He said, "They can't be." And my daughter wanted me to change the word mommies or women. She said, "Say ladies, it's nicer." So it was like finding out, you know, you had the enemy in your own house. And what I really, I was thunderstruck, because I knew they hadn't heard that from me.
Yeah.
And so how had they heard it? You know, how was this possible? And I became a little obsessed with the project after that.
Yeah. I became a daddy in 1986, and of course Sesame Street was still on the air. When my daughter was three, she liked to come into the room when Sesame Street was on and say, "That's daddy's song, that's not daddy's song." And she knew my repertoire pretty well.
Mm. Now, what about, Carol, let's circle back to It's All Right to Cry. Did either of your kids sort of provide research fodder for this song?
Oh, totally, because my kids were at a school called Little Red Schoolhouse in New York, mm-hmm. and I called up the school and told them what we were doing, and it was kind of a renegade school,
And they loved the idea. And I wanted to go into their, specifically their 5-year-old and 6-year-old class, because it seemed to me that that was kind of on the cusp mm-hmm. of people being old enough to be told they shouldn't cry, you know, especially little boys. And as a mother of a little boy, I had experienced perfect strangers saying to my child, you know, if he was, let's say, having a little fit in the drug, mm-hmm. In the drugstore because he wanted a lollipop or something, strangers would say, no, big boys don't cry.
Right.
So I was pretty interested in making this right, and I went into the class of 5- and 6-year-olds and just said, let's talk about crying. What does it feel like? And they were the ones that gave me, crying gets the sad out of you.
Yeah.
That was came from a child.
Well, I want to play, Carol, a clip for you. We invited some of our listeners who called in last night to, you know, not just give us their memories, but if they felt like it, to kind of sing a little bit of their favorite moments from the album Free to Be You and Me. Here's Sherry from Nyack.
I grew up with Free to Be You and Me, and I think my favorite line was, Dudley Pippin, did you knock over the sand table?
One day at Dudley's school, the sand table tipped over.
Dudley Pippin?
I didn't do it.
But his teacher didn't believe him.
I was always the kid that was crying in school, and I felt like I always had to be ashamed of crying, and I would sort of run to the corner, and I just loved that whole Rosie Greer song.
Well, the story of Dudley Pippin leads into the song It's All Right to Cry, sung by Rosie Greer, who joins us now on the phone from California, the actor, singer, author, minister, former professional football player who provided the vocals on It's All Right to Cry. Rosie, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it is my pleasure to hear all about how this came to be. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful rendition. All these things were so great.
How did
children love it everywhere? I see them all the time now. They bring me the album covers mm-hmm. and all that now.
So how did you first get involved in Free to Be?
Well, I was in Washington, D.C., and Marlo called me, and they said they had a song for me to sing. Well, when I heard the song, I mean, and the way it was sounding, it was not my song. And then it was the greatest song that I've ever sung, because I didn't have to really sing it. I just kind of did the song as a little guy and talked about it, and it was just beautiful. I cannot tell you the impact that song had on a lot of children.
Right. It was an unusual message to get out to kids, especially to boys. And we're talking about 1972. But you had the kind of stature among boys of my age and even younger that we actually listened to you. Is that why they chose you? Did they explain why they were matching you with this song?
Well, because I was a football player. I mean, I'm a big football player, and kids were always being told, particularly young boys, that big boys don't cry, and the question is, why not? And I liked it. I liked the idea that telling young boys it's all right to cry, because I cried very easily, and so that was just perfect for me.
You also went on to show boys that it was okay to do macrame and needlepoint as well.
Needlepoint, yes. Anything that you wanted to do would satisfy you. That's up to you. It's not a woman's thing and not a man's thing. It's just whoever wants to do it.
Right.
If I could do it.
Well, as I say, you know, that message coming from, you know, one of the most fearsome NFL defensive linemen of the day, that message got through to a lot of kids. This is the song, Rosie Greer singing It's All Right to Cry.
It's all right to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you. It's all right to cry. It might make you feel better. Rain drop from your eyes, washing all the mad out of you. Raindrops from your eyes, it's gonna make you feel better. It's alright to feel things, though the feelings may be strange. Feelings are such real things, and they change and change and change. Sad and grumpy, down
in the dumpy, snuggly, huggly, mean and ugly, sloppy, slappy, hoppy, happy, change and change and change.
A little bit of It's All Right to Cry from the album Free to Be You and Me, sung by Rosie Greer, who's on the line with us, written by Carol Hall, who's also on the line with us, and arranged by Stephen Lawrence, who's here in the studio. Carol, did you know, you said before you did know that you were writing this for Rosie, right?
I did, but I must tell you, John, this is a huge moment in my life because I've never met Rosie, and until this minute, I've never had the chance to thank him. I'm going to cry now.
It's all right to cry.
Let's all cry. Thank you for doing my song. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a lovely song, lovely song. Thank you so much for allowing me to do it.
And Stephen, the arrangement, you know, sort of the break in the middle that allows Rosie to kind of give us the spoken part, how much of that was done, you know, kind of in the moment in the studio?
When I first played the song for Rosie, it was a little sweeter. And Rosie started sort of stamping his foot against the ground in tempo and said, "Can you put a beat to it so I can go chung 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 chung?" And so that's why it opens with that. We didn't hear it tonight. It opens with a strong, and then there's a break in the middle also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little harder, but it worked well.
Probably
because
I was singing it, I think, to demonstrate it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And Rosie, did you say that when you first heard the song, you thought, not really for me?
Well, yeah, because I was singing in a nightclub, and I wasn't used to this kind of, I wanted to sing out, you know.
Right.
But I was holding back, and I was singing it for kids, and it worked so well. It just made me feel so good when I heard it and when the kids started reacting to it.
Now, you've had one of the most varied careers of anybody I know, Rosie. Where does this song, this moment, this musical moment stand for you in everything that you've done?
It's really, really tall there. It's probably one of the biggest things. I'm still singing, still working at it, but it's a lot of fun just to hear this and see the reaction. I see people all the time that walk up to me and say, "I was raised on Free to Be."
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's just great.
Well, Rosie Greer's been with us on the line, the actor, singer, minister, NFL star, sang the song It's All Right to Cry on the album Free to Be You and Me. Rosie, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you. Carol, let's move to another song that you wrote called Glad to Have a Friend Like You.
Okay.
What was the message here? How did the sort of the ideas behind the songs get communicated to the various writers?
Well, in this case, I think I came up with this myself, but if Stephen knows a better version, please go ahead and tell me so. I had, as a mother, not been able to find very much in the literature about boys and girls playing happily together. There was an awful lot about rivalry. There was an awful lot about it's our clubhouse, we won't let girls in, a lot of little stories like that. But I saw my own two kids playing together all the time in a wonderful, creative way. And I wanted to write a song that specifically would have the games or the things being done and played out. I didn't want them to cost anything, which was just sort of the subtext. And I just wanted nothing more than a story about things you could do with your brother or your sister or your friend who was not the same sex as you.
Right.
Things you could do that were fun.
Well, now, I have to play for you another call from one of our listeners. This is Chrissy on Long Island. She says she grew up listening with her best friend to Free to Be You and Me.
She moved the day after my sweet 16 to Georgia, and I live in New York. And I couldn't believe it that after, you know, I don't know at what point it was during the party, but she, suddenly I heard, you know, the music stopped and the song Glad to Have a Friend Like You came on. And of course we just ran to each other and cried and, you know, couldn't believe that the next day she would be moving. And we're still best friends to this day. And we met when we were in first grade and now I'm 41. So I'll sing our favorite stanza from Glad to Have a Friend Like You. Pearl told Earl that they could do was secret code. Earl told Pearl there was free ice cream when it snowed. So they sent funny letters that contained mystery messages, and nobody knew just how they made it. And they raised up the window and they scooped all the snow together, put milk and sugar in and ate it. And of course, we actually made snow. I mean, we made ice cream by putting milk and sugar in snow. And we made my father eat it. That was a smart thing.
That is Chrissy on the line with us from Long Island. Carol Hall wrote the song, Glad to Have a Friend Like You. Stephen Lawrence was the music director for the record and wrote a number of the songs as well, Free to Be You and Me. Stephen, did you guys have any idea what kind of impact this record was going to have?
Oh, no, no, no. The record company said we could hope for 15,000 sales.
And?
And it sold over a million. I'm not sure how much. It just keeps selling.
And 40 years later,
yes,
here are people calling us eager to tell their stories,
yes,
and to sing your songs.
Yes, it's a phenomenon. It doesn't go away.
It hasn't gone away. We've been celebrating the 40th anniversary of the album Free to Be You and Me. Stephen Lawrence, the music director, Carol Hall, one of the composers and lyricists. And Stephen, Carol, thank you both so much for your contributions
so
to the record and for being on the show with us tonight.
Thank you, John.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck.
They made ooey gooey chocolate cake, sticky licky sugar top, and they gobbled it and giggled. And they sat by the river and they fished in the water and they talked as the squirmy wormies wiggled, singing.
That's going to do it for our look back at Free to Be You and Me. Today's show is just the tip of the iceberg. You can hear podcasts of all three installments of the series. Just go to soundcheck.org. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team, with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, Jason Isaac, and George Wellington. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff, along with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.